A Piece of Paradise Lost. Imagine an island located in the heart of Southeast Alaska, in Duncan Canal. It was referred to by locals in Petersburg as one of the Castle Islands. The island was incredibly unique, as it was protected from the north by an island that was magical in its own way. At low tide, the two were connected by a sand spit. The North Island had a huge cave and was laden to the north with spires of rock that had been eroded away from over tens of thousands of years, hence Castle Island North. The island just south, about to be inhabited by Sigma Thiessen, had a large flat area that once cleared made an ideal place for a large garden, cabin, warehouse, and root cellar. The flat area continued to the water and ended with a sand and gravel spit. The property was exposed to the sun from dawn until late in the day. This land spoke to this man, and it touched his heart and his soul. He was a true pioneer who poured his life's blood into this special spot. He heard God's voice in the wind. He was acutely aware that God's breath gave life to this world. He was deeply moved by the beauty he observed in each sunrise and sunset. Sig learned something important lessons from the earth, the tides, and the wind, and he was immersed in peace as he found solace in this great land. In living so remote, it never entered his mind to do the necessary paperwork. During those early days, Alaska was a territory, and it was necessary to prove up on the island and establish ownership. He assumed it was his by the right of sweat and blood, and it wasn't until Alaska became a state and the federal government stepped in that he came to realize that he now had to pay $50 a year to retain the place he had spent 30-plus years making his own. Like the Native Americans, he assumed the earth was his to use, not by a legal piece of paper, but by hard work and a life dedicated to living off the land. Once again, the government would strike and use its power to take over this most spiritual spot. Butter clams on one side and steamer clams on the other. Dungeness, crab, halibut, salmon, deer, ducks, geese, shrimp, and a multitude of berries and grubs called this home. In the late 1930s, Sigma Thiessen found this piece of heaven, and he went to work building a home, which included a pantry, a kitchen with an antique stove, with warming ovens over the top and a water container attached to the side. A dining area with an antique table and chairs, living room with a couch, two easy chairs, and of course, a nice little bedroom. He'd built the house high on piling, which left room for storage underneath. A large slanted roof was attached, covering the back door, which made easy access for the five cords of wood stored there. After completing the house and putting in his large garden, he went to work on building a two-story warehouse where he kept his tools, hung his deer and ducks and geese, and processed all the food that he grew in his garden. At the rear of the warehouse, he carefully dug a root cellar that would keep what his garden supplied in good shape for the winter. It took years, but he had carved out a wonderful place for himself to spend the rest of his life. He was protected from southeast storms by an island just south of him and from northerlies by the one just north of him. When there was sunshine, he was located just right to be exposed to its warmth and heat nearly all day. Sig was my great-great-uncle, and he was generous enough to allow me and my friends to stay with him on weekends in the fall to hunt ducks, geese, and deer. These visits took place in the 1950s until his death in 1962. Our visits with him were most memorable as he shared a lifetime of experiences that he had had in this special place. We cut wood for him and did many chores around the island to help him out in his later years. When he passed to the other side in 1962, his nephew, great-uncle Adolf Mathiesen, agreed to sell the home site to my grandfather, Carol Claussen, my father, Bob Schwartz, Jerry Kernvick, and myself. Jerry was in the Army at the time, but would soon be home to share in a place he, too, had spent so many incredible weekends. The lease from the Forest Service was $50 a year, which was paid in a timely manner. When we took ownership of the cabin, it was decided to put a new roof over the main house. Soon after its completion, we got a warning letter from the Forest Service that it was the wrong color. We built a new outhouse a good distance from the main house. Again, We received a threatening letter from the Forest Service that the new outhouse was too close to our source of drinking water. Our drinking water was being taken from the roof off the main house on the side facing away from the outhouse. About that time, Jerry had gotten out of the service and was working on Prince of Wales Island. I was in Sitka teaching school. During this time, my father continued to get warning letters from the Forest Service about the roof and the outhouse, and in disgust, he finally discarded every letter from that department. In 1967, I returned from teaching in Sitka to take a job in Petersburg. Jerry was still working on Prince of Wales. I asked my dad about the status of the yearly $50 fees. He didn't know. At that time, the Forest Service was located on the upper floor above what is now the Chamber of Commerce building. Upon inquiring about the cabin, I was told that we were $100 or 2 years in arrears of our lease payment. I agreed to pay the back 2 years plus interest plus a fine if there was one. I was told we hadn't changed the color of the roof or moved the outhouse, and because we had failed to pay the lease for 2 years, they were taking the site away from us. This included the cabin, the warehouse, tools, the generator we'd installed, and all the furnishings. I was horrified. I said I would pay anything to get it back. The answer was absolutely no. And if I or any of the other owners were to step foot in any of the buildings, it would be considered a felony, and we would suffer the consequences. I wrote letters everywhere, including offices in Washington, D.C., with absolutely no response. After a long time, I finally settled down and thought, well, maybe now the Forest Service will change the color of the roof and the placement of the outhouse and make it available to the public. All those years we'd owned the cabin, it remained open with plenty of firewood and food available to anyone who might not be able to make it out of Duncan Canal in a screaming southeast storm. We had many entries in the logbook from those folks who had found warmth and shelter in the cabin as they tried to return to Petersburg from Towers Arm, McDonald's Slough, or the Saltchuk. By mid-1968, I was sick at heart and finally gave up the quest to get the site back. The ultimate irony is that the cabin sat for nearly 40 years, from 1967 till 2004, with absolutely not 1 ounce of care from the Forest Service. About 2002, a young couple with 2 children found the abandoned site and began fixing it up. As soon as the Forest Service discovered this attention to the site, they burned the building to the ground. Just one of many, many cabins that they had destroyed over the years. I have recently spoken to the man who was ordered to take a crew to this house, tear it down, and bring the remnants to town. He said that the cabin was so well built that even after 40 years of just sitting, it would have taken a very long time to disassemble it. Because of that, they made the decision to burn it. He has since retired from the Forest Service, but he stated with sincere sadness that it was the worst thing he ever had to do while working in that field. Now in 2016, they have publicly stated because of a shortage of funds, they may not be able to maintain their own cabins and may quite possibly have to tear them down or burn them. Where's the wisdom in all of this? It baffles even my limited IQ. Maybe instead of spending a lot of money tearing them down, they could put them up for auction to the general public. A sad story, yes, but just one of many that will never be told. A footnote. At many of the Forest Service cabins in southeast Alaska, rather than digging a hole in the ground for an outhouse, they now have containers that, once they are full, have to be removed and transported to town to be deposited. Can you imagine what that must cost? The administration costs alone to coordinate such an endeavor must be astronomical. And imagine the engineering that took place to design such a unique facility. By the way, I do appreciate all the trails the Forest Service has created in our local area. It's not this administration or personnel that's responsible for what happened in the 50s and 60s. Hopefully, wisdom will prevail, and our local Forest Service can find a way to retain the cabins that are left in their care. They are frequently used, and they're very much appreciated.